everyone, and thank you again for tuning in to Boom Chuck, a Drummer's Podcast. For those of you that don't know, I grew up in southeastern Michigan. That includes Ann Arbor, Detroit, cities like Dearborn, Taylor, and then up in Royal Oak, all that kind of stuff. So basically around Detroit, that little corner of Michigan. Now, if you were a musician within this area in the last 20 or 25 years, you're going to know my guest. You're going to know him from working at Guitar Center. You probably bought gear from him. You're going to know him from playing in the bands that we're going to talk about today. He has developed himself into what we call Super B. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, Brian Smith. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. I can't complain. Yeah? It's weird. I mean,
you can't complain.
Can't complain. Yeah, yeah.
That's good. I mean, with all the stuff going on and COVID and being stuck at home. Now, you're home. How many kids do you have now?
Two.
Okay, two kids in school.
15, 14. One is virtual, and one kid decided to go back to school. So it's been pretty interesting.
I feel your pain with being a creative soul, a musician that just wants to play and do this, but being stuck at home doing math. You know what I mean?
It's like, weird. Really, I'm the limo driver. I take the kids here, take the kids there, and which is fine. I mean, that's what I signed up for, and I try to do the handyman stuff, and you know, I'm a pool boy, and you know, all that. You know, it's funny. You know, probably like you. Well, at least you're still, your band's active. I would consider your. I know it's not active, but compared
it's
to
not,
my
well,
band,
yeah.
You're at least you're in the game, and knocking at the door and moving forward, you're in it, where like I'm for sure on the bench, you know, just watching.
But you're playing.
I'm playing,
and that's the thing, is being a dad, being, you know, having that home life, hanging. I've talked to several guys where it's just like they're either weekend warriors or they're doing whatever. You're playing, and I think you've been playing so long, it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's second nature, because obviously as a drummer, we're always learning, we're always doing this stuff, but you're still playing. It's one thing to just be like, oh, yeah, I play like every 3 weeks or 4 weeks at like church, or I go over here. And that's just like, no. You're playing as much as you possibly can.
Right.
I'm sure you guys are practicing every week. I'm the same way. Right. I'm at home. We're not doing anything. Now, granted, I had to do something. That's why I started doing this. But like, yeah, we're writing. We're practicing. I'm recording. I'm doing as much stuff as I can.
Right.
But
yeah,
everyone in our side of things, in the entertainment side of things, everyone's in the same boat, man. Like, everyone's home. Unless you're a country artist, then who cares?
Yeah, yeah, your fan base says, I'll get the Rona.
I went to Nashville, and it was like, I was uncomfortable walking down.
That main street is where all the
main
bars
street. I was
are.
Like looking around like, why does no one have a mask on? Right. Well, they're like, oh, the buildings are open. And there's like, you know, five floors of, and I'm sitting there like, I thought I got it. There, I was like, because I'd flown to Texas, I'd done a recording in Texas, and I was like super like double mask on the plane, wiping my seat down and all that. And the studio was not shut down, but it was like, if you're in here, you're wearing a mask. If you're playing, you don't have to wear a mask, whatever. I wore a mask when I played. It wasn't a big deal. And I know Michigan's completely different.
I think it was coming back, but then we had the spike again. Everyone's getting vaccinated. I got vaccinated at Myers. I got
really?
Both my, yeah, I'm good. I'm like, bring it. Let's do it. You know,
I miss Meyer. I miss Meyer,
I know.
Man.
And they had it down awesome. Like, so I was signed up, like, you know, Oakland County, Beaumont, you know, everything you could be. Meyer's first person gets it. I show up, and I see the line. I'm like, oh, man, this is. But nope. Line, it took 10 minutes to get to where it was all done in like 25 minutes. And they had the whole procedure done in Myers, like in the closed section. So like, you know, the closed section. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm like, what a great job. I mean, and they did a great job,
right.
You know, like
yeah.
It's a pandemic. It's weird. And they're just like, boom, boom, boom. And I was like, right, good job. You know, we always hear the negative. I was like, man, Myers, you stepped up. And they had my business anyway, but I'm like,
well,
forever. Like, I'm like, dude, they're getting my money, and they stepped up.
Obviously, with you being southeastern Michigan, for people that are going to listen to this that have no idea what Meijer is, look it up. It's like down here we have super Walmarts and super Targets. I still miss Meijer.
It's not the same.
Like, It's so, I mean, and when they went in and like redid them, I think right before I moved down here, they redid all the Meijer and there was like sushi bars and like, I mean, it's like Wegmans in New York. It's like that, but for like
Midwest,
what, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio. Yeah. I think that's it, right? There might be one in Pennsylvania or something. I don't know.
I've never seen it there. Yeah, Meijer's is like Walmart, but good. You know, like,
right. There's not a people of Meijer website.
No,
but anyway,
there's no weirdness. I mean, there's weirdness in Meijer's, but not Walmart.
There's weirdness.
Not Walmart weirdness.
I don't know, man. That Ipsy Meijer, that I've spent a lot of times there, and that's the thing is, most of them or all of them are 24 hours.
Yeah.
So you go in there at 3 a.m. There's some weirdness.
No. There's some, but it's not Walmart. Because every time I go to Walmart, it's like, man, and we're talking like Novi Walmart. It should be kind of normal, but
yeah.
It's like
nah.
Huh.
Well, thanks for being on my podcast. There's a reason, a specific reason we'll get to later that I wanted to talk to you. We talked about it yesterday, but I want to know, and for the people that are going to listen to this all over, hopefully the world, where did drums, what's your history? Where did drums start for you?
Okay.
How did you become super?
Okay. I can do this quick.
Go for it.
All right. Right on. My dad was a drummer. His brother was a drummer. And my cousin. So it was like, it was always there. And, yeah. But it didn't become official until, what is it, 7th grade band. So I wanted to play saxophone. At the time, Men at Work was big and they had the saxophone, Hall & Oates saxophone. There was a band named Quarter Flash. And you can look that song, Hang My Heart, whatever. She played saxophone. So I was like, I want to play saxophone. The teacher literally looked at me. He just looked at me, goes, nope, you're the drummer.
They did the same thing to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, cool. All right, fine. And like, cause everyone wanted to be the drummer, but I think they do that on purpose. Cause you know, I want to be saxophone. So from then right away. And so that guy, Mr. Bedard was awesome. So he's like, he put me on the drum trap set. And he gave me lessons. He sold me, I got a Slingerland snare drum from him. So that started, and in the following year I was in a band and we played the talent show, the Q-Tips. So I mean, I was hooked.
Nice.
You know what I mean, like right away. And we played shows, real shows, and
yeah,
it was awesome. And blah blah blah. So in but now that was in Minnesota. I moved here. My dad was in radio. He ran a station here in Michigan called WLLZ. It was Wheels.
Yeah.
And I didn't have so when I graduated high school, I didn't have my shit together. I was a mess. And he's like,
who is it?
Yeah. And he's like, you got to come with me. And I'm like, all right, fine. So I moved. That's when I moved to Michigan. And I actually went to University of Detroit. But my dad was in Wheels. And it was just whatever. And I got my first band, the Chuck E. Seeds. And we actually were playing and played shows like Paychecks and Hamtramck Pub. I wasn't Super B yet. I was still B or Brian or B.
Right.
And
right.
And I got one band, Black Molly, and we got big. We opened up for like the Beastie Boys in Lansing and played the New Music Seminar. I thought I was gonna make it. We don't, obviously. And but it was cool because we played literally 3 times, all originals. We didn't even do a cover. We played 3 times a week. So, like, Alvin's, like, Majestic, Blind Pig a lot.
Of course, yeah.
Cross Street when it was open.
Yeah.
But that band crashes, and that's how, I think you know Dana Forrester. I got with her at Jake's, so it's 60 Second Crush. And that's when, so we toured Europe, Germany and Austria. It parts.
That's in Europe, though, so that counts, right? So
to me, I was
that's right.
I drank.
If you needed a passport to get there, it's that
dude,
counts.
It was,
man.
Beer City. I didn't care. You know, was awesome. But I still wasn't Super B yet. Oh, I was Super B then. Well, anyway, and he the guys who called me Super B, because I didn't call myself Super B. Jay Holly, he just passed. It's a bummer. But the guys in Soot. I was so I was their drummer and I was having a rough time. Things weren't going my way. And Jay loved me. And he's the one, he's like, dude, Super B, you're the Super B. And I'm like, and at that time, I had a car catch on fire. You know what I mean? And like, I'm using mass transportation in Detroit to get to work. It was just,
wow.
I was not, he did it to keep me going. Mm-hmm. And so that's when it all changed. And he just passed. So I'm going to get emotional here because we actually played his funeral. He was a big biker. He ends up being a biker and like Foundation 14. And he's a Scorpion. And he was trying to get bikes to veterans. He had this whole... And he was getting all the bikers, like all the different clubs to be together. So in a short amount of time, he becomes like this figure, this powerful figure. And he wants my band, like Mighty Jones, to play. We played all their biker.
Wow.
You know? And you know, like Flophouse, it's the same music. It's me and Victor. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the same music.
Yeah.
And and so you bring us in and he's like, dude, I love you guys. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you guys, your club hates us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. They're all looking at you guys like, I don't like this funk in here. Yeah,
They wouldn't even, like, there'd be like 200 people there. They're staring at us. We end the song, and we just see eyes. We actually get smart. We figure out, we end up playing all covers. We switch it.
Right.
But we did it our way. Like, we would do, like, Midnight Rider. But we did it like the Joe Cocker funky way. And, and we did things like that. We do like Rolling Stones and but things that we could get into. And then it turns around and they start liking us. But he dies during COVID. So like in April 2020.
Okay.
His dying wish was to have us play. So we, I know, dude. So
that's great. I mean, but that's a testament to like, honestly, to you, like he, there's always this guy, but like you've stuck. You're you, right? So his dying wish was to be like, I love this man. I want him to play like his band, whatever. Like, that's great. I mean, that's awesome.
I know, but dude, it was a mind fuck, dude. I was a fucking mess. There's thousands of bikers, all these different things, and it was heavy.
Yeah.
And so when you're saying like, how did you become Super B? One thing is Guitar Center. The other ones is this Jay Holly. That's Super B.
Yeah.
Because this guy just loved me and believed in me. And another, it was Guitar Center. Like, I didn't know that job, that gig, music retail. I had no idea I was going to love it. So, yeah, how would you know until you do it?
Right.
And I knew Mark Sutton at RIT, you know.
RIT in Ann Arbor, yep. RIT drums, yep.
He didn't know me. He didn't give a crap about you know what I mean.
Right. Once you're on that side of the retail thing, you're just like, customer one, customer two, you know what I mean?
Obviously. And even then I was like, I wouldn't even talk about my band, you know what I mean? I was like, whatever, like the sticks. And but that gig, now it took me some time, like I said, and we'll get to it with the when we get to the injuries and the stuff. And when I was trying to allude to yesterday about how my head wasn't right, so even though Guitar Center molds me and makes the Super B or whatever, and I end up loving it, there were still some things, pieces mentally. If I had it to do over again, there was a lot of things I would have, not a lot of things, but certain things.
Always things.
I would have changed.
Sure.
And you don't know until you have kids, and that's why you have three kids and you know.
Yep.
How do you handle situations in your life? It's different before kids and after kids.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Because you, like, no matter what, you're all of a sudden, you're responsible for someone other than yourself. Marriage is one, you know, like, you get
that's
married
one thing.
And things. That's one thing. But then when you have to keep something alive, like, not a plant, not an animal, a person. Like, then it's kind of like, like, your brain definitely switches. Like that.
I think with kids, what I learned is like you can't fly off the handle. Even though sometimes I still do, I still make the mistakes.
Oh yeah,
But the more you can stay in the pocket in whatever situation and just like try to take it, and that's where at Guitar Center, I think I've not failed, but there was times I just wish I just would have kept it in the pocket more, and just try to figure it out. Not that I was a total yell and screamer, but things would. I would get mad.
No. I mean,
I would get mad.
So, with Guitar Center, that's where we met.
Right.
And I was that kid that I would come in and buy sticks or whatever, and you were in the drum room, and like you didn't know me from anybody. But then when I started working there, that's when it like that core of people that were there, and I was there 3 years. I wasn't even there a long time comparatively, but like that core of people, we all became friends. And the funny thing was, is like there were times. I mean, I was pissed off a lot because I didn't love it, but it was more, I didn't like the pressure behind it.
Right.
I would have loved to have a drum shop that was just like, yeah, I'll say this, whatever.
Right.
I didn't like all the quote unquote corporate side of it. I loved the back, honestly. Yeah. I loved being warehouse manager. I loved the organization. I loved all of that. There was maybe two times. I think you got mad at me once. But it was because I rolled something I wasn't supposed to roll, or I didn't put you on something, and you like came in and yelled.
I know,
at me.
That
I
was early on. You,
but I was like, I'm sorry, yeah. And I re-rolled it, and you're like, okay, we're cool, and that was it. You know, it was like, but there was times where it's like, as you would grow, I mean, anybody, as you would grow, I think the pressures get more and more intense. There's more numbers you have to hit. There's extra things you're doing. You got to unlock the back door. You got to do all that. I mean, right. even me going sales associate to department manager to warehouse manager, like there's more crap. Like I remember getting in fights with everybody. When you don't have kids and you don't know that yet, and you're in your, you know, whatever 20s, 30s, like it's, you just react to being people being stupid.
Right.
It's really what it is. So there's no fault. I'm telling yeah. you, there's no fault for you, because I was the same way. I think everybody, that core group, everybody was kind of the same way. When things would be stupid and you knew either that person wasn't going to make it or whatever, you just kind of was like, you're an idiot, you know, kind of thing.
Right,
but
right,
you
right.
couldn't say that, you know, but even though I did sometimes. But, you know, but yeah, I think it was more, it definitely, I think for me, I guess, I don't want to speak for you, but it's that same thing. Like even you said that, yeah, but man, it was that corporate side of things, I think, and that was like, I have friends that work at Guitar Center now, and they call the period that I work there.
That's the golden period.
It's not the golden. They call it, I think they say it's the dark years, because that
it
was
is?
Like that. Because so you work there, you could wear jeans. You could wear what, dude, when I was on the floor, I remember polo shirt, khakis. We were used car salesmen. That was like, cause you had left and then you came back. Right.
Right.
But I think it turned into a very corporate thing. And then I remember, dude, being a warehouse manager, I was sweaty every day. I wanted to be in a t-shirt. I understand the pants thing. I would wear jeans, whatever. But dude, I remember having to put on a collared shirt just to take boxes out. And I'm sitting there like, we're selling metal guitar. We were in Detroit or Canton, right? We're selling metal guitars and freaking like mid-level drum sets to a bunch of people with tattoos that are angry and haven't showered in 4 days. Why do I need a collared shirt on? You know what I mean? It was like,
and a belt. Remember that?
Tucked in.
Yeah,
I remember.
Tucked
I got
in
sent
shirt?
Home one time because I had facial hair and I wouldn't tuck my shirt in.
Wow.
Sent me home, and I'm like, come on. But I mean, that's the thing, is I think the pressures behind that cause that, and it's just internal stress that come out. I mean, that's me. And
I'm not beating myself up. I'm just saying.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying. I would have attacked it, not totally different. I still, the energy level and trying to have fun.
Oh, you were always ready to go, man. I saw you drink 4 or 5 Red Bulls a day for a
easy.
Long time.
And just like my injuries, like I haven't had Red Bull in 15 years. You know what I mean? I wouldn't learn anyone's name. I would wait like 3 months before I'd learn their name. That's kind of a dick, but just because the headspace. But I remember what my relationship with you changed. Because obviously I always, being a drummer, and I ran that room.
Yeah.
I got a perfect 10 twice.
Yeah.
You know, so I was really into that room. So I was always like, don't let this room go down, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, the people you work with, there's some riffraff and whatever. But this one day, I would come through. So I always cut through the drum room. I wouldn't cut through the other way. Fuck that, you know. And, and I remember coming through. So this is early on that you were working there. You set up on the drums. It was the prettiest thing. You had like every splash, all the cymbal, you know what I mean? You wanted to test out the rack, and you had the coolest setup. I don't know if there was octobons out, you know what I mean? You had whatever the
probably
side, whatever the side drums were, a DW or whatever.
Right.
And it was the coolest thing. I remember I came in and I came back and I'm like, who did this? And you're like, me? I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. This is beautiful.
Really?
Yeah.
And, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, and I think you guys were going to, like, I'm going to yell at you. Because, again, the corporate thing, you couldn't do that because the Sabian had to be on this kit and the Zildjian had to be on this kit. And if we had Paiste, who knows, had to be on this kit. And there was rules. Right. And I'm just like, holy wow, this guy. Look at this guy. And then that was cool because there was a switch. So now I'm looking at you, and this is before I even know your plan, you know, all that stuff. And then you were really cool. So you'd be working on stuff. And then you're like, hey, B, check this out. I'm like, oh, let me check this out. And I just remember this ostinato, which, I mean, we all messed around with the ostinatos, but you were doing the cool one where you were skipping. I'm looking at my left foot, your hi-hat, where, you know what I mean, you're going.
Oh, yeah, heel toe.
The heel toe. So that's like the authentic one. And I'm just like, I'm like, look at you. And I remember at that time, that's when I'm all banged up and I can't practice. And we'll get into that. You know what I mean? So there was part of me I was jealous, but I was like, man, look at this guy, man. This guy, Chris Phillips.
I did have a music degree. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, I don't know that at the time. Right, I don't know you're teaching out in Ann Arbor. I know, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm about to know because now you're on my radar. And that was the cool part about our gig. So it could be like Mark Pelick showing us his singles, you know, and it's like, oh, sweet, man, I'm going to steal that. Your thing, like where how your head was like, oh, I'm going to steal that. That's cool. Steve Fornino. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, oh, cool, I'm going to steal Fornino's. Not steal it, but, you know, like.
Everybody stole Fornino's stuff for sure.
Right. But keep an eye on it. And
and
that was the cool part. So even though. There was times where, not ignorance is not the right word, like I got, my eyes are like this.
Blinders.
Yeah, tunnel vision because, like you said, oh, okay, you got to do this today or the store's got to do this or whatever, which in the scheme of things is not important. But what is important is like, oh, cool, look at Chris Phillips' licks over here. I'm always interested still, but because of that, my head, my ears, my eyes, you know, my brain is open. And that was the cool part about guitar. So like you said, not only the brotherhood and sisterhood. So we got this love thing that we're all still friends. We're all talking to each other. Everything's good. And so we have this whole information definitely made us better musicians for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And that's the thing is, like you said, bouncing off, having that retail side of things, you could bounce things off. I mean, it was a glorified, like, 8-hour practice day.
Sometimes
it could be. You know, you still had to do your job and do whatever. But like, I had a bunch of congas I could mess with.
Right.
How do I tune a conga? Okay.
How do you know unless you don't have one? Right.
I mean, that rack thing. Like, if we don't have the out, people like, I'd rather have somebody walk in and go like, "Well, I need to buy 10 splashes because there's 10 splashes right. They all sound different." It's like, yep, or at least buy 3.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or whatever. Like. So it was more, I looked at it as, and granted, I also had come from, I was selling sunglasses. Like, I ran stores. And so it was like, if it wasn't out there and people couldn't touch it, you weren't going to.
How would you
touching
know?
It is, going in the cymbal room and hitting it is one thing, but playing a beat and then hitting it is different. I would set the room up to where when you walked in, it was like you had to buy something.
Right.
It was like, I wanted it to be a completely different store.
Yeah.
So we've alluded to it a lot.
Yes.
And obviously when we met, there was a point in time where you were at Guitar Center, you were still doing stuff and your hands started hurting.
Yep.
Now, this is the reason I wanted to talk to you because again, you're the only person that I've known that's gone through this and come out the other side, really gone through it.
Yeah.
But you've come out the other side. You are 100% recovered.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So what exactly happened? This injury that we've been alluding to, can you explain to everybody what happened, how you went through it, and what was the whole process to get you where you are now?
Right. So I've been thinking about this. So we're going to keep this tight because it could really spiral out. Like I alluded to before, I was in bands that played a lot live. And I wasn't doing the right stuff. I would play real tight, really grip those sticks, and I started studying with people, and Jeff Michaels, I don't know if you know Jeff Michaels, he's back in my life in a lot of different things right now, drums, and he was trying to tell, at the time, he's like, Brian, you got to loosen up, you're going to hurt yourself, and I'm like, yeah, but how, you know, but over time, but it took a long time, so around 97, 98, I finally get it to where it's relaxed. I think,
yeah.
But by that point, I think I did the damage, okay? So around 2001, I think, or two, I developed a tumor in my left hand. Left wrist. It's above the left wrist. I'm looking at the scar now. And it's bulging out. I mean, it was disgusting. And so we got to take it out. It's not. Yeah. It wasn't cancerous. So but that whole time, I'm like, everything is cool. Because I remember people were like, oh, no. I'm like, no. I'll tell you when to worry. Not this. Yeah. This is going to be all right. It's going to be all right. And they pull it out. Surgery's great. I don't know. Like, it just stops working. And while that's going on, the right hand decides to stop working.
Carpal tunnel. Yeah.
Carpal tunnel. So at that time we met, I have two hands in hand braces and I'm playing shows and I'm recording and it sucks. And this is where I'm going to get back.
Were your fingers out?
My fingers were out. Yeah. It was like
fingers
those,
were out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the whole hand was cast. The palm.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it was a hard plastic mold. It, for your listeners, think about like fingerless gloves, but it's like a plastic mold. And I have it on both my hands. It was a drag. And that went on for a year. And
right, that's a long time too to wear that.
A long time. And I didn't think I was going to get through it. And while this is going on, this is where I kept a secret. And that's why I'm glad you called, because now I can come out. My right foot, my bass drum foot, goes out.
Really?
Yeah. And so that whole time of Flophouse, I'm probably playing at 50% with my right foot. The only way I got through it, because I knew the Jeff Porcaro double, you know, the slide to get the quick doubles.
Yeah.
If I didn't know that trick, I don't think I can get through. I probably would have had to quit. Because I just couldn't stomp out. And then I made the mistake of getting that giant Bonham kit, that 26-inch bass drum, and you really got to lay into it. And I'm like, why did I do this? I have a foot that doesn't work, and I'm trying to push air through the biggest, you know, drum you can. It was just dumb. So all this is going on, and it's always there for a long time, and it finally goes away when I start doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But that's not until 2009.
So you were playing on a gimp foot.
For sure.
For a long time. When the surgeries happened and the year recovered, like, your hands started coming back.
They come back, but it's super weak. And because one has carpal tunnel, I can only practice so much. Because what you really got to do is strengthen it up. You got to get there, do your singles and doubles and your paradiddles.
Get your pad out.
You got to pad it out. I can't do it for long stretches.
Right.
So, but I got smart because Dennis Chambers, he did it on a pillow. So I got lighter sticks and then I would work, but I could only do it maybe like a half hour. So let's say that takes about a year and a half, 2 years to shake out. So probably the start of Flophouse is 2005. I'm playing without the cast and stuff and the mold. So, and that's good. That's positive. And I think by that point, my hands are back, but my foot is out. It's done.
Yeah. Wow.
And do
you have any idea what that caused that? Like what that
I
was
do.
From?
With the foot?
Yeah.
I think there's a Dr. Sarno, and he has the mind-body connection. And it really has to do with back pain. And so Howard Stern talked about it. He said, oh, I got rid of my back pain because of this book.
Yeah.
And so I got it later. Really, I mean, if you have something physical wrong, you have something physical wrong.
Correct.
But a lot of it is it's in your head where things are not right. And in that time period, my head wasn't right. It just wasn't right. And so my body's compensating by false triggering different things. So I didn't have an actual problem in my right foot. I have a mental block because just wasn't right.
And that's it when you say it out loud, everyone is shaking their head right now going, oh yeah, I know exactly what he means. But like the physicalness behind yours and what you did and what you wanted to do as a drummer that blocks that. And that's like terrifying right. almost, you know? So,
and I don't even know. And I read this article, the drummer for Gentle Giant, he had to quit because his right foot just gives out.
Yeah.
And so that's always in the back of my head. I'm like, dude, I think it's over. But I saw that my hands were coming back. I'm like, I can get the foot back, but it doesn't really come back till I start doing jiu-jitsu where I'm running. I had to run to get in shape. So I start running.
Well, what brought that on too? Like what brought, sorry to interrupt. What brought that on where you're just like, I want to do jiu-jitsu.
I wanted to do it. I wanted to jump in. The thing is, and I wrestled a little bit. I think you wrestled too.
No, I was too fat to wrestle. I couldn't wrestle.
Really?
I did football. I couldn't wrestle.
Okay, you did football. All right.
Well, I could wrestle, but it was like WWE wrestle.
Oh,
like,
that's all
I did. Yeah, yeah.
All right. I did real wrestling, but mm-hmm. I wasn't very good at it. But I didn't care. I needed something physical as a stay-at-home dad, and I'm in pain. I'm out of shape. Maybe this will get me going. I was also had some depression problems. Nothing bad, but I mean, I was alone. I was with my kids alone.
Yeah.
Not because of anything bad. It's just how it was.
Right.
Like I wasn't working. I wanted to work part time at Guitar Center. They pushed me out. But yeah, how that ended at GC, it was weird. But so after that, you know. I'm not saying I'm alone because I was still talking to everybody, and Flophouse was like in full swing, you know, like we do that Crossroads, you know, in Chicago. They flew us out. Eric Clapton. I mean, we're playing a lot, and, you know, things were, I would say, going well. I mean, Mikey, I don't know, was Mikey playing at Uncle Cracker yet? I mean, he was close. You know what I mean? It was like that thing, and I couldn't do anything. Like, it was funny. So for me to run, to get going, I would have to walk, and not even walk. Like I would have to stop.
Right.
And which is weird, because like now I run a 5K every day.
Really? Wow.
Like I could do it in 23 minutes.
The time doesn't matter. Yeah. The fact that you just do it is great. That's amazing.
But I'm just saying, so where it starts, I'm saying where the journey starts is like, so there's a guy who can't even walk. I couldn't even walk a mile.
Yeah.
Without stopping to this. So we're doing this, and I get involved in jiu-jitsu, and it's a loving place. It wasn't really I end up competing, but it wasn't a competing place. It was a place where jiu-jitsu, I guess any martial art, is like drumming or being a musician, where there's different styles. There's different ways to attack it. And being as a drummer, it was a huge advantage, especially if you're into four limb independence.
Yeah.
Your legs are stronger than arms. Yes. So it doesn't matter how strong this other person is. If I get my legs on them, like as a shield or whatever, they can't do anything to me.
Yeah.
So my sensei, he's more of an artist. He likes to dance in his free time. And so he liked how I attacked it. Being a musician, especially in a two-piece band like I Am Dynamite or Mahoney, where you could really be naked and you're really taking crazy chances. I mean, not that you're playing King Crimson, but I'm just saying, being two people naked on a stage where your guitar / bass player is also the singer and the drummer is the singer, you know what I mean? There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
You're naked, you're vulnerable. It's the same thing with jiu-jitsu, where you're naked or vulnerable. And I wasn't scared. So these guys are killing me, and I didn't give a flying fuck.
Right.
Because I played a show where someone threw firecrackers, you know, on the stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did they do that? I don't know, because it's Detroit, you know?
Right.
And,
right.
And you've had that guy where people are like flipping you off, or worse, they don't even care. Like they have, like Purple DeVille with Dan Lee, our band, one time we played a show where they preferred listening to Jimmy Buffett on the jukebox than us. You know what I mean? That's so crushing.
Yeah.
I did that twice.
We got there was one time we were playing, and we'd always do this thing for a long time. Like, when we were like starting to like really, really push it, it was Mahoney at that point. We were still in Ann Arbor, and we'd go play live at PJ's And I remember going down there, and every Tuesday night, they were just like, stage is yours, do whatever. We'd set it all up, we'd do it. And so because we were teaching, every Tuesday, we Back in Black, we'd play Under the Bridge. We'd play just the songs we were teaching and doing all this stuff. It was really easy. And then one time, we'd always do this little funny thing, like, bring your lists up. We'll just play whatever you guys want. And it was always, we'd just play like a half of a song or whatever we could muster. And one time, this dude screamed at the top of his lungs, play anything but your original songs.
Oh.
And this is pre-in-ears, like, and we just went, right. Oh. Because we're just like messing around, like having fun. Right. But like we're being musicians. We're on stage. We are putting ourselves out there. And this guy right. just took the whole thing, snapped it over his knee, and threw it into the woods. It was like, instantly crushed. And I yeah. think I said something. I was just like, thank you for paying your – I was like, thank you for paying $5 to be here, sir. We appreciate that. And then we just went yeah. off and played. But it was just
that's
like –
the best way to handle it.
Yeah, it was like, oh, my gosh. Like that,
kill that guy, with kindness.
Yeah. So I don't know who it was. It was probably one of my buddies, honestly. But I don't know who it was till this day. But it was like that soul-crushing, like –
Yeah,
I we've all been there, but that's like my yeah. personal like, oh yeah, that's gonna
that's
be stuck in my brain for the rest
no,
of my life.
No, it's awesome,
for sure.
But because of the jiu-jitsu, yeah. what happened is my foot comes back.
Yeah, and you think it's just from
so
strength
running.
And running and blood flow.
Yeah.
And yeah,
so all that's gone. And then in jiu-jitsu, if you're playing gi, there's no gi, and the gi is the pajamas.
Yeah.
You know the Japanese kimono
right.
to help you out, your listeners. And it's hard fabric. And one part of the game is you could choke people with the gi. It's awesome.
Really?
And yeah, wow. I like if you have a gi on, actually with your sweatshirt, I could do it.
Please
I mean,
don't.
Anyone who does it. It's,
we're still friends. Please.
No. We only
yes.
use jiu-jitsu for good.
Correct.
Only good for
yeah.
good. But you could choke people with it. And then, so like my hands were just. Like feeling good.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man, my hands are good. And my foot's coming back. I'm like, oh, my foot's coming back. And it was awesome. And so yesterday when you were like, hey, I want to talk about your injuries, like, wow, man, I haven't thought about it in 11
yeah,
years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like,
yeah.
But I would later, because of jiu-jitsu, break my foot, tear the ligament. I also tore a ligament in my left knee. I mean, it's not like I just got scot-free
right,
out of
right.
this, but that's one thing about doing martial arts when you're older, the injuries just
oh yeah
they rack up real
doing
quick.
Anything when you're older and, is like oh working out I'm like it takes me days to recover sometimes.
Yeah, I that's what I don't do any weights.
Yeah,
I probably should, but all the guys that I see and the women, I mean it's mixed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, you can get I get inspired by the women practitioners too.
Yeah.
It's not just dudes or whatever. In fact, the one woman, Miss Christy Ferenzi, at my school, she was awesome, and I loved like rolling with her because I learned a
yeah.
lot. So it, once you get your head out of like, oh, you know, women can't be good, they can. And
they're probably women are stronger
out,
than they all appear. So like, they, yeah, yeah.
Especially when you untap it, like you let the tap off it.
Yeah.
You know, and they know they could do it. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a whole nother animal. You're like, oh man, I'm getting throttled.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not in a good way. Yeah. So yeah, because of that. So, and then I was getting my head right. So when you get your head right, you're working right. All of a sudden, the mystery injuries,
yeah.
they're gone.
Yeah.
So like my hands are like awesome. I got no blisters, no things.
Yeah.
Like I'm faster. Not that I play fast. It's not part of my game, but I am faster
right.
now than I was then. My right foot is, it's great. You know what I mean? I could do triplets. I had not 10 years, probably. At least 5 or 6 years, I could not do triplets with my right
yeah.
foot. Couldn't
wow.
do them. I could do doubles, like with the trick,
right.
with the Picaro trick, but no way. And that's the thing. Some of the Flophouse music required
right.
that. And so I would do a double, then hit the floor tom. It was my only way out of it.
I guess the beauty of it is you're smart enough. I mean, it sucks that you were going through it, but because you knew what you were doing and you had put in the work, you could take your mind and go, I have to have this triplet, but I'm going
to
spread it across. And you could change,
I
which is,
to.
Again, that that comes from that work that you put in with your hands, with all this other stuff, which is good too. That's another lesson that when people hear this, it's like, it is more like you did put in that work. And so you were able to compensate when you weren't at 100%, which is
right.
What we have to do sometimes.
I got lucky. Yeah. I also got lucky, and like you, so you're your own coach and quarterback in your band. You're the general manager, and that's I've always been like that in my bands. Yeah. Where I would fail, like the times I do fail in music, is when I try to play other people's stuff.
Oh yeah,
like, and so like they'll call me in, like, hey, can you fill in here?
Yeah.
I just can't because it's not me, and so I got lucky while I was going through all these injuries that Victor and Mike. They didn't care.
Right.
I'm not saying they didn't care. They would care if my groove was off.
Right.
They would care if I'm playing too fast or something like that. But they didn't care that I did a triplet on a floor time. But some cats, they do. So if I was working with another guy who was, like a drummer. I see John Kay was a drummer. He also, his songs are great. I really like this stuff. And his drummer just quits. And he's like, this happened like before the pandemic. So he's like, hey, yeah, my drummer just quit. I got a show. I think you could do it. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, sure, of course I can. You know, I'm Super B, right? Dude, I bomb it.
Really?
I bomb it. And I couldn't feel the groove. I couldn't feel it. Because I have it trained like Flophouse or Monty Jones, whatever. It's one groove, the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, and so we haven't said. So obviously you referred to Flophouse a bunch, which is a band that you were in for a long time, which has morphed in. I say morphed, but like it's Mighty Jones.
Yes, no, we morphed into
morphed
Mighty.
Into this band, Mighty Jones. I mean, how that sound, because everyone's like, well, what does that mean? That sound is just, you guys are you're like a funk rock band. An Americana funk rock band, right? Like,
okay. Yes, I would agree with that.
The groove has to be solid, and it has to be there. And you said, like, with Mike and Victor, in Flophouse, the guys in the band, they didn't care because of the funk side of it. It didn't matter. It could be loose as long as the groove was tight, right? So that's
right.
So it's when you're saying this about John Kay, it's more this guy has it in his mind, and you have to produce that, and it's, that can't happen.
Yep. Yeah. And I couldn't catch the groove. I couldn't. And I tried. That's the thing. It's one thing if I was like being arrogant and like, okay, I'm not going to listen to this and I'm Super B and I'm great, blah, blah, blah. No, I was doing the homework. I charted the songs. I did everything you were supposed to do. And then when we got time to play it, I knew going in, I was like, because I try to call him saying, dude, I'm not catching this. He's like, oh, dude, you're Super B, blah, blah, you can catch it. Just play with us. And I'm like, okay, maybe he's right. Maybe I just got to play with him. So we get to the rehearsal. Dude, I'm not catching it. And I know. I mean, we know.
Oh, yeah.
We know the truth. And afterwards, and you can just see the look on their face. They're like, oh. Jeez. And I'm like, dude, I am not getting this. He's like, try again. Give another week. And so same thing again. I'm charting the songs. I'm listening to songs. Dude, I just couldn't. I couldn't feel it. I couldn't feel it at all. It felt so foreign to what I was doing. It was everything. Like, I don't play rim shots. He wanted rim shots. It's like, you got to hit rim shots on everything. No, we're talking about hand problems. One thing you're adjusting from the hand problems, I quit doing rim shots. And so he's like, rim shots. I'm like, oh, man, I hate this. And then he wanted to crash on, and I'm totally cool with riding on crashes.
I hate that.
You know what I mean? Like, that. Yeah. I haven't played it in 21 years. That's my
pet peeve is when everyone's like, oh, get on that crash. It's like.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing. So I'm right off the bat, I'm doing things I don't want to do. And then same thing. So it comes that second one. And then it was awesome. Talk about like getting like fed their humble pie is like they get the band in a circle and I'm part of the circle and I just want to leave. I just want to get out and go, dude, this ain't happening. I want to leave. And he goes, okay, we're going to go around the circle and put it to a vote on if you should play. And I'm just like,
what?
No.
You should have said, can I have the first vote, please?
That's what I said. I go, John, we do not have to do this. I'm not feeling it. That was terrible. I'm sorry. I tried. It just didn't work. Let's just be professional. Yeah. It's okay. You know, it's okay to do your best and fail. Yeah. That's okay. I know. It was, dude. And you're talking like Superman. Hey, Superman. And, you know, people, I swear to God, during that time, oh, you're so good and all this stuff. And then I'm just getting the humble pie, just fed right
you know
down
what,
my
though?
Throat.
But the nice thing is you know, it makes you, like, everyone has their lane. You know, being a studio musician is, like, the respect I have for those guys that can just, like, they live in a studio and they can just go in and be like, oh, today we're playing this, you know, funk R&B groove. Tomorrow we're playing some metal. Like, those guys kill it, man. And they can, that's what they're wired to do. I struggle, like, when I go in and have to do stuff where I'm not ready, or not even not ready, I just don't know. Like, doing a studio gig, getting paid to go do something, which I've done here and there, but even going to be creative with friends, like, flown to Texas to jam with my buddies because our bands were, you know, doing nothing at the time. It was just like, I was terrified. I was, like, flying to Austin going, I hope I'm good. They all have platinum records on the wall. We've gone cardboard.
Yeah, right.
That's how many albums we've sold. We have a cardboard plaque, and they have platinum records, and I'm sitting there like, I am the low man on the totem pole. It's terrifying. Luckily, it went okay. And I was honest. I said, I'm the nobody here. Like, you guys all have names and Wikipedia, websites after you. And I'm like, and I don't. But they're like, immediately was like, well, we just like the way you play. And it was like, okay.
Right. Well, they put you at ease.
It
they
puts
were
me
cool.
at ease. And we're friends too. So that's the same thing. It was more just like, so what? If the songs suck, they suck. It cost me $11 to fly out there because I had points. Like, it was, like, not a big deal.
Right.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is it's the fear sometimes. But you knew. Like, you knew going in it wasn't going to go well, and you still went.
Well, that's one thing about being older and knowing the truth. If you're arrogant, and you always got to serve the music. And I actually said that line to him. Very rarely do you get to say the quotable lines in real time. I'm like, John, we got to serve the music. And it's not like I'm not doing a good enough job or I'm not trying. It's just not happening. And so we got to move on from this. And it was too bad because up to that point, every time someone called me in to do something, I never failed. You know what I mean? It was always like, hey, can you do this? I'm like, yeah. That was like the first time. Like,
that's a good career. If that's the first time you failed and you were like, had been playing that long, that right there, my friend, that's good. Because there's been times where people have just been like, hey, maybe we should try something else. And I'm just like, okay. And that has happened to me a lot. And again, it was more when I was cocky and younger and whatever. Now it's just kind of like, I can say no. Can you come in and do this? I probably won't be very good, but okay. Having the band where you're in control, you are the creative all day. That's where I can't.
Yeah.
I can't do cover gigs. I can't do, like, I'm just not wired. I know great musicians that can do that. And granted, my band will throw in a cover every now and then. But, like, I want to do that because it's more fun instead of, you know, I'm not wired to do that, because then it's like I feel then I have to play. I'd have to be in a tribute band rather than a cover band. I can't do that, because then it's just like I got a buddy who's in a Journey tribute band, and I laugh at him like, that's not what Steve Smith played. He's just like, he goes, I ain't Steve Smith. But I'm like, but it serves its purpose. It sounds like a Journey song. It's more for the harmony, or sorry, the melody and the guitar riffs and all this stuff. The drummer could get away with some, but, like, yeah, I always tease him. I'm like, I'd have to be, and I'm wired that way, and I have to play it exactly how he played it, and I don't want to.
Well, there's a joy making not. Like making, I've always been in original bands, always, and making your own, regardless if it's good or bad. I mean, it's whatever. But I'm cool at playing covers. But what you're getting at, I doubt I'm playing it note for note.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get upset when I'm like, oh, there's more grace notes in here that I'm just not getting, and I get so pissed at myself. But, like, yeah,
it's just weird because back in the day, so the music, Mighty Joseph Flophouse, we, like, you know, it was like 60s, 70s. Funky, groovy music. And why are those time period, why is it good? Because they had drummers, live drummers, and the drummers are playing live. There's no drum machines, blah blah blah. But these bands, like let's say Creedence Clearwater Revival, so CCR or whatever, John Fogerty was tracking with Chad Smith this later on in his solo career, and Chad thought it was like really tough, you know what I mean? And he found out like they made like 80 edits in his track, and he's like, what? Right. And then he talked to John about it, and he was like, why don't we just play the song? And he goes, yeah, we could do that, but he said CCR, he's like, we played 8 hours a day every day for 15 years or whatever it was. We were so locked in with each other. You know what I mean? And all that music from that time period, even like Guns N' Roses, like, so they kicked out Steven Adler for doing too much drugs, which is crazy. And so they're auditioning drummers, and Slash, because they always looked down at Steven Adler. They always thought he was like a dummy and all this stuff. But when they started auditioning supposedly these great studio drummers and these great drummers, they were trained a certain, you know what I mean? That groove. And if you listen to Appetite for Destruction, there's a groove on that record, and it's awesome. The whole record is sweet. Yeah. So even though these guys are technically better drummers, they don't have that groove or whatever thing. So that music that we're into, or anyone's into, it has a groove and a feel, jazz or whatever. It's just missing from today's things. But what I was getting at, that to actually try to mimic that or try to recreate, you can't do it. You can't do it. Not because we're bad drummers or we're not to the detail or attention to detail. It's just so, it's like that person's soul, that drummer's soul, or their essence, their vibe. And we are who we are. The same way, let's say, I am Dynamite. Chris has to leave. Hey, B, can you fill in? I'd be like, no way. You know, it's like that. I mean, I would, if I got that gig, I would have to interview you. I would have to hang out with you. I would have to see what you ate. I would just have to be around, just see how your nuance, how you are as a person. And we change. Right. Like me at Guitar Center, I was fast. I was hyper. I was, like you said, on 4 Red Bulls. Now, man, dude, like I nap all the time. I'm really slow.
I love it. That's good.
Seriously. So like my groove is going to be different. Not that it's worse or better. It's just different. How I handle Victor now, it's cooler because we're both older. We played with each other now like 16 years. It's a slower groove. We don't have that problem of rushing tempos or playing things. If we complain that something's played too fast, we're talking it's only a couple of ticks. Why is Zeppelin great? You know, because there is a flow to it. I think if Zeppelin was on the grid, like by today's standards.
I always wonder. So I like taking songs like that, like taking, I mean, I don't know, Kansas or freaking Black Sabbath or whatever, taking those and putting them on the grid and listening. It's like,
oh, it's going to
sound. It sounds awful. Like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
But it's funny to hear, like.
Like War Pigs? Like, if War Pigs was too.
I'm teaching War Pigs now. And just to teach that, just the groove. Like, I've told my student, I'm like, all right, listen. If you want to take a pile of drugs before I get here and then we'll do it, then that's what you got to do. I don't want you to do that. But I was like, you got to think of when they recorded this song. This is how this song was recorded this time. When you watch another version on YouTube or whatever, it's probably a different drummer, or that guy's out of his mind, or this guy. Like, it's different every time because that's just what people. I mean, they didn't do that. That's just what it was. The bands, they'd get together, they'd play, they'd capture that moment. That's what the world hears. That's what made that song classic, which is, again, it was that guy's groove. It was the band's groove at that moment, and that's what we cherish, right? Like, it's hard to teach that and explain that to people of any age that don't have that background. You know what I mean? That can't wrap their minds around that. It's impossible.
Right, like Bill Ward, that lineup, again, they were around each other all the time, playing all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, just before we leave, I just want to say not only did jiu-jitsu help me with my injuries and stuff, it got me to where I earned my sound recording technology certificate.
That's awesome, yeah.
from Schoolcraft because of jiu-jitsu. I wasn't afraid because remember, like we talked about. So because of music, I wasn't afraid of jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Like I wasn't afraid of getting my ass beat.
Right,
who cares?
Right.
You know, I just didn't want to get hurt. I didn't want anyone to hurt me. But everyone was cool. I got lucky. I was at the right place. At certain schools, you would get hurt. Someone like me would have been demolished. Yeah. But the school, I don't want to say they put kid gloves on me, but they looked out for me.
Right.
You know, being smaller, older, a brittle.
Right.
Whatever. So they were cool. So my school looked out for me. In jiu-jitsu, it's crazy. There's a thing called side control. So that's when someone gets on the side and they put all their pressure on you, you wish for death. All your air gets sucked out of your body. And then, but you don't quit. You don't tap or you keep going. You fight through it and you're okay.
Yeah.
You're not hurt. You're not dead. It's fine. So, I was touching my fears. You know what I mean? I hate to go back, but it's got to be scary as hell to be a two-piece band and to go out there.
Yeah.
But you touched your fear, right? There's got to be a fear, but you touched it and you embraced it. And then obviously you saw something. And you're like, whoa, this is great. Wow, we're connecting. We're me and we don't need, because that's the thing. I get it why only two people are in the band. I get it.
Oh, yeah.
The more cooks in the kitchen, things get squared up. So you have a connection with each other. So I get it. But so you touch your fear early on. So I was touching my fear. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to figure out recording. And everything switched. And now I wish I would have done this 30 years ago because I love it. That's the thing. So me and you,
we're
on a podcast. I want to send Chris this wave. So it's going to sound, I'm recording on a Neumann mic. We're using preamps and blah, 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 blah. But this whole, it's going to be amazing.
Yours is going to sound the best, the best one ever. So it's going to be perfect.
Right. And so like on my drums, these are all mics that you see in every studio. And
I'm loaded up 421s.
Yeah, if you don't have 421s on your toms, I mean, what the hell are you doing with your life?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, you sound so great. But anyway, but I wouldn't have known that, you know? And you know, I've experimented on the snare. Me and you got to talk sometime about snare mics. I still, whatever.
It's an ongoing battle.
That's what everyone says. So
just honestly throw up a 57 and call it a day.
I stumbled onto this Bear Meyer or whatever.
I've heard of this. Yes. I know that mic.
But it looks like a condenser. It is a dynamic. What's cool about it, so with the pattern, it blocks it from the side. So like your 57 blocks it from the back. And again, I wouldn't have known that unless you go to a recording. You don't know that stuff.
Yeah.
So what's cool about this one, it gets a really good snare sound. It's not that boxy sound, but it blocks out the hi-hat.
That's my problem. Yeah,
I know. Hi-hat is in everything. Whatever. So I don't want to bore your listeners with.
Well, let's talk about, before we wrap this thing up, I do want to talk about gear.
Yeah.
So you said you've changed to Gretsch's. Obviously, it's behind you. They can't see that.
Wow.
But,
with this gear,
look at it. You got it out.
That's
perfect.
This is what Craig Winston did. So,
and is he still, it was a Motor City Drum Company or something like that?
Drum Company.
Okay, so he's still doing it. I mean, all these years later, that's amazing. Yeah.
There's an interesting story on this one. So, like in the Monty Jones shots, you see this drum set. It's natural.
Yeah.
It's a round badge kit, but there's no badges on it because someone stripped this kit. I don't know. It's been Frankenstein, over and over again. So it's an excellent kit to use to do a rewrap because there's nothing original. I mean, the lugs and the rims are all original, but it's been drilled into. It's not pristine. So someone's like, oh, why would you, you know, rewrap a kit? I mean, you just wrecked the value. The value was wrecked.
It's gone. Yeah. You drill a hole in it. It's
30 years ago. I mean, there were so many holes in this sucker. So Craig was cool. So Craig plugged up all the holes, rewrapped, everything. Now, I put square badges on it. But Craig and I, we were like, man, let's put round badges on it. So I got round badges coming in. So I'm going to take it back to Craig and he's going to put round badges on it. So
cool.
But what's cool about this kit, it's a 10, 12, 13, 14, 16, 20, and a 22 that I could just mix and match. I mean, as a studio kid, you know? And
yeah, that's awesome.
It's exciting.
And honestly, having a Gretsch, I mean, of course I'm a Yamaha guy, but having a Gretsch is like, I mean, it's just so classic. And especially an old Gretsch, as that one, as a round badge, it's never going to fail you.
It sounds so good. So my red ones, I got it in 2007.
Oh, really?
So now they're starting to warm up, you know what I mean? So it's a real Gretsch. Yeah. So I love Gretches. My problem, snares. I got, like, all the snares. You know, I got I just went back to the Superphonic, Ludwig Superphonic.
Again, a classic snare.
It's
so
the snare.
Like,
it's the bottom snare.
How many snares do you have?
Like, right now, 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I have 10. Actually,
that's not bad, right?
Nine and one on order.
Okay.
That my wife doesn't know about.
No, you never tell them. Never tell them.
Well, every time like an Amazon package comes to the house, she's always,
you got to snatch it before she's home.
Yeah, she goes, "What did you?" Well, she's home. Like, everyone's home. She goes, "What'd you sell?" And I go, "You mean what am I going to sell?" And she just rolls her eyes. And now, usually now it's hardware because like I'm bored, so I'm doing building and refurb and all this just to, like, I love drums, so it's like having the ins and outs and how does this work and this hardware and drilling and all this. It's I'm just want to be a nerd about it. And I found a bunch of drum shells in a dumpster, so I might as well
have some fun.
Try and experiment on them. Yeah. How about cymbals? What are your cymbals of choice?
Those hi-hats. That's a Zildjian KZ. I've had them my whole life. I had them since like 92 or something.
Oh, wow.
They're
green. So they're well worn in.
Oh, they're green. Yeah. They're green. And the other one, Mark Pellick saved this cymbal. So the ride cymbal is a Sabian Larry London. He was like a drummer. He did all the sessions. He was a Nashville guy. He was a
– yeah.
So they only made like, I think, 1,000 of them. And I got it, like, again, early 90s. And this one night, I think I was drugged at – so Purple DeVille opened up for Sweaty Sway Lips at the Magic Stick. And this guy, like, he's like, hey, he was acting like he knew me. He gave me, free drinks. And I was just, whatever. And then I don't remember anything. So I left my cymbal bag, right? Pellick it and grabbed it, saved it. So those hi-hat and the ride, Pellick saved, for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can never get rid of those now. That's like a great
story. No, I mean, and dude, he's like, did you forget something the other night? I'm like, And then and then he hands it to me, my cymbal bag. And I'm like, dude, you know what's in here? He goes, I know what's in there. You know what I mean? And I'm like,
wow.
And I pull
out
that ride. I'm like, not that I was going to cry. I'm not much a crier or whatever, but I was getting emotional. You know, I'm like, I can't believe. I'm like, what the fuck? I go, and that's when I put it together. And I'm like, was I drugged or I don't know. It was weird, you know, like why would I forget?
Right.
Why would I remember my drums but not my cymbal bag? You know, it's weird, you know. Anyway.
Dark bar, black bag, things happen. Yeah.
I know, but I mean I've probably played like 500 shows in my life. That's the only time I've done it, you know. It's weird.
It's
but
crazy.
The other two crashes, K's, just Zildjian.
Yeah.
I'm cool with Sabian, I'm cool with Peisty. Or whatever, you know, I'm not a stickler to cymbal. It's just what it's what I have.
Right, and that's the thing is you've had them in there. With Zildjians, it's too. It's like when you find the cymbals that, like, not define you, but, like, this is your sound, this is what makes you sound good, stick with them.
Yeah.
Having that ride and hi-hat, I mean, they're right there. It's just like having them for so long, it's awesome. You've played them, you know, a million times.
I didn't know this until we worked at Guitar Center. Like, saw how Zildjian Sabian make their cymbals, even in the cymbal line, the cymbals sound different. That's why you got to try them. Where Peisty, whatever, if you like the 2002 17-inch crash, it's the same. If you don't know that, let's say you're like, oh, whatever. Who cares about Zildjian? I mean, I can get this cymbal tone anytime. That's not true.
Nope. Yeah, it's all different.
Yeah, you're like, what the hell happened? You're like, wait, I love this cymbal. Why does this one sound like butt?
Yeah.
Because it's how they cast it or whatever.
Yeah.
And which I didn't know until when someone said, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, it all makes sense now.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I'm like, that's why my cymbals, I went like this.
Yep. But, and I'm constantly fluctuating, changing cymbals, but it's like once I find a good one, I'm like, nope, this one. This goes in this bag and doesn't come out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have that for sure.
I always wanted to switch to Paiste. I just couldn't afford it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Each cymbal is like $350, $400. Yeah. And I don't have that discount anymore.
Oh, yeah, seriously. I loved that discount for sure.
Yeah,
sometimes that discount's better than like artist cost sometimes. Just throwing that out there. Sometimes.
Yeah. But those days are gone, buddy.
Those days were long gone. Yeah. Long gone. And then, obviously, Gretsch, what heads do you put on those?
See, with that kit, I can only use the classic. It won't fit. So, like, old Gretsch drums from the 60s or even 50s, you got to use the Remo classic.
Yeah, okay.
Because it won't fit over the wrap. So, with those, I gotcha. I have to do that. On the Reds, I can use anything. I like, Coated Ambassador or Coated Emperor. I like the Coated Emperor because it tones it down.
But you're a Coated
bit.
Guy. Coated instead of clear.
But on the Vistalites I used when I had the Vistalites. I like clear. The pinstripes are cool. You know what I mean?
Vistalites, I mean, that's, you have to have. If you put coated heads on a Vistalite, it's like, what are you doing?
I did at first because Fernino warned me, because he's Mr. Vistalite. He's like, Brian, if you don't put coated heads, I know you. If you don't put coated heads on those Vistalites, you're not going to like it. You got to warm them up first. Warm them up. And I'm like looking at him like, are you sure? He's like, Brian. Because like, he didn't call me B. Steve always called me Brian. He's like, Brian, come on. And I'm like, all right. And I did. At first I had coated, I think, Emperors on them. And they sounded great. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was digging that kit. And then I think I went to Steve. I think it's time to switch. He's like, you're ready. Like it was like a young Jedi. You know,
ready.
You're ready.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Fernino. I miss him so bad. He was awesome. God, all you guys, there was times, like I said, you know, things would be stressed out or whatever, stupid. And yeah, like Fernino, like with like just cool me out, you know, like,
it'd
be awesome.
His presence, though, was very much, he'd walk into a room and he was just like, hey. Like, it was just like, oh, everyone take a step back and chill out. Like, that's just what I thought. Yeah.
Hey, Brian, man, I'm going to show you something. I'm like, show me something.
Yeah. Please. Yeah. Well, dude, I appreciate you coming on and sharing that story. And that's I think that's the big thing is when we talk about this, when people listen to this, there is always another side to it. Like, things happen, injuries happen. I mean, I've stabbed myself in the hand before a show. I've thrown out, you know, my elbow. I've thrown out my shoulder. I've done these things as a drummer. It's like, you need your arms. I've definitely, when I got my knee surgery, it was my hi-hat leg, so I could just stick it out over here and not do anything.
It didn't matter.
But when you have major surgery on your hands, the things you need, and then when your foot goes out and neurologically or just brain mentally, function or body just doing something to your body, there is – and again, like you said, it's like, is it depression? Is it stress? It's world. It's life.
I think it's
right?
all
like,
of it.
It's all of it comes together, and your body does compensate and do these things. But it's great to hear that on the other side of it, you found it with jiu-jitsu. People could do anything. Could just be running. It could just be whatever.
Yeah.
You can
I
compensate.
I think yoga. Yoga is where it's at. I just
yoga
didn't
is
do
huge.
It.
A lot of drummers, like the Orlando drummer, he does his own yoga. He does like the Orlando drummer, and then he has like yoga on top of that. It's like, but again, the stretching behind that. We're athletes. I mean, when you look at us playing a show, we're constantly moving. I'm a big dude. I've always been a big dude. It's like, I know there's been times where I've literally stood up, walked three or four paces, and the walls start closing in because I'm either calorie crashing or whatever. Like, something's happening where I've just burned that much. So in my mind, in my heart, in my soul, everything, we are the most athletic musicians out there. So we have to treat ourselves – like that. And I think with stretching and all this other stuff and the rehab like you did, even that and going back to rudiments and all this stuff, pad work, all that stuff doesn't stop for us. Like guitars, it's like you become a great guitar player and you could BB King was a great guitar player. End of his career, he sat in a chair.
Yeah.
Like, we can't do that. We can't sit in a chair and just go like this. It's not going to happen. We
not
have to live
independence. No
right.
way.
We have to move. We have to do all this stuff. So I think it's awesome to hear a story where it's like a major thing happened, was going to take it away from you, and through everything and just working through it, finding something that centered yourself to the point where it's fixing itself. It fixed itself, you know? I think that's great. I think that's a great testament.
It took time.
It does take time. It always will, I think. But, I mean, as it is now, it's like you're in a better spot, which is great.
I'm in a great spot.
You're more comfortable doing you, which is always a goal, right? No matter what music you're playing. You just, hey, if you're not comfortable being in a band you're in, blah, 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 change the band, leave the band, get a new band, just whatever. But you got to do you, which is good. So I think this whole thing was how it all starts. And when we get to that point, you see there's a light at the end of the tunnel and you can go through it and accomplish goals that you never thought you would have to accomplish. Just once you find that thing and you can hook onto it and go for it. Like, shoot, man, you went to school and you got your studio because why not?
And you find out something that you love you didn't know. I didn't know. How would I know? I never went in that pro audio room. Only for approvals. I wouldn't go in that room.
Yeah, it was scary.
But now, you can't have regrets or whatever, but that's a part that could have been a lot of fun. We could have this whole adventure of learning, not so much on the customer side, but I mean, just the same way that we would learn in the drum room, I could have learned in the pro audio room.
You can't. It's harder to go in there and learn, you know what I mean? Because they all know it, and then they expect you to know it. It's like when your customers know more than you. The drum room is easy. I always knew more than the customers.
Yeah.
I could fake it. Like, they could know more, but I could treat – they would treat me – drummers are different, right? They could treat me like a, you don't know this? Let me show you. Instead of a pro audio guy would look at you and be like, you don't know Pro Tools? You know, whatever. It's like – Pro Tools sucks. I hate Pro Tools. It's like, but yeah, I mean, shoot, man, it's more, being a drummer is way more of a, there's a respect because we've all started at this point and we remember what it's like to be at this point. And that point, so like your story, that point could come back and not even haunt you, but you could just get knocked down back to that point, back to where it's like, oh, shoot. I think drummers, we have that. We can go back to that. I mean, you don't see concert pianists going, I'm going to practice my C scale. You know, that they're not doing that. But we're always going back to how we started. You know, so.
I saw a Terry Bozzio thing. This is like a 95. Yeah. But what he said, and it was funny, because he did this classical piece. It was like 20 minutes just on solo drums. And it was the craziest ostinato solo.
Right.
No one on this planet could ever copy it. And the first thing he says is like, whatever you do, don't copy me. And which is hilarious because we're not going to copy. But he figured out whatever beat he learned. So even the simplest beat, you know, one and, you know, bass drum on one, snare on two, three, four, you know, the simplest. He figured by switching it, like the permutations was like 19. He could switch any beat. So he didn't consider he mastered anything unless he went through the whole 19. Good I think it's Lord. 19. Right.
Yeah.
Which is awesome to be more musical. And it just shows you that just switching it, it's like a whole different thing. And it's awesome. And you can open your mind because all of us, we get stuck for whatever. It's like, oh, I'm playing the same.
We
mix.
All do.
I'm playing the thing and whatever. And, oh, if I just switch this here. Like my thing right now is like I'm still going to do it, but I don't want to play on the 2 and 4 every time. There's got to be there's got to be something else. And there is. You can do ands. You can do E's. And you can switch it up. And same thing with time. We're always in 4. We have one thing in like a 6-8. But but I want to put funk in 5. I want to, you know what I mean? I want to mess
sounds awesome.
With it. Yeah, right? Yeah. And do those kind of things to open it up. It doesn't always have to be 2 and 4, you know, 4-4. There's other ways around this, for sure.
Well, yeah, man, I appreciate it. It's good to see you, man. It's been a long time, so.
Don't be a stranger. I mean, I love your comments on.
And I mean that. Like, dude, you've always had the groove, man, and I loved it.
Thank you for everything. Just thanks, you know.
Oh, of course, man. You need to post more videos. I was just going to say, I got to drop. Your Instagram is @SuperBrianSmith.
Yeah, there's a Mighty Jones Band Instagram, Mighty Jones Band.
Yeah.
on Facebook, Mighty Jones Band, YouTube, mightyjonesband.com. So we're all there. And thank you so much.
Dude, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Everyone, I am Dynamite. Dynamite.
No. Ladies and gentlemen, Super B Brian Smith.
Woo! Woo!
Oh, all right, buddy.
Came back.
You did. There he is. You took a Red Bull, didn't you?
All right. Thanks, Chris.
See you, buddy. And as always, you can check us out at Boomchuck on Instagram. And Brian Smith is at Super Brian Smith on Instagram. Thank you guys for listening so much. I'm taking you out with Mighty Jones. Here is We Rock the Boogie.